Spoken word.
A taste of Melbourne's diverse poetry scene.
Poets using their voices to entertain, to move, to take you on a journey.
Connecting you to grassroots poetry and performance.
Good morning and welcome to the 3CR Spoken Word program. My name is Di Cousins and I'd like to acknowledge that we are recording on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation and I pay my respects to elders past and present. Today in the studio I have Eddie Berger and Joel O'Connor. Welcome.
Hi Di.
Hi.
Hi. And Joel has co-edited with Sean Stanier a new book, The Millennium Poets 2, Anthology of Poetry and Short Stories. And Eddie Berger has contributed to that. And it's a great project.
Thank you.
Yeah. So tell me about this is The Millennium Poets 2. So how did it come about and what was Millennium Poets 1?
Yeah, thanks, Di. Well, in the 90s, one of the big poetry scenes happening around inner Melbourne was coming out of the Empress Hotel in East Brunswick. My base of operations at that time was across the road where I was living behind Psychic Rainbow Tarot Readers, and I used to go down the road to get a $2 falafel every Wednesday, and it just so happened that I saw poetry readings happening in the Empress across the road. And when I went in there, lo and behold, I met an old mate of mine who had run poetry readings in Bendigo, Sean Stanier, who was emceeing poetry readings there. And I'd been looking for poetry readings that sort of fitted my experience of the way it was growing up in country Victoria, which was very open, anybody can do anything, there's an opportunity for people to express themselves and that sort of thing. And was trying to find my home in poetry in Melbourne, and when I walked in there, there was that vibe, and I felt at home. And so I got connected to the poetry scene there, and at one point the poets got inspired to collect their works together and put them into an anthology. So some of the key poets involved in that scene, Sandy Jensen came up with the idea, and Evan Flux came up with the name Millennium Poets, and everybody put their written works on the bar, and Sean said he would compile them into a book. So Sean wrote me in at one point to help co-edit that book, and we took it around to publishers and so on in the late 90s, didn't get anybody to pick it up. Went our separate ways. I jetted off to Paraguay for several years and Sean went to Stawell, and the book sort of went into folklore. A few years ago, I'd caught up with Evan and Sean again and started floating the idea to think, well, it'd be great if we reconnected with the poets who were involved in that first book, and what if we were to have another go, try and reformat it and maybe do a new version of their works. So that was the first kind of iteration. And I thought, how can we make this even more special? What if we were to look at engaging poets, like kids of the original poets who are poets as well? So this was more of a kind of intergenerational thing. And how could we throw the net wider to also recognise other poets who were key in Melbourne's overlapping scenes at the time, like Eddie? And poets who are active now as well. So when the book came together, you know, there was an opportunity for people who got the vibe of the book to get involved and put their works together. And we've created this work as a collective thing. I've done most of the editing and so on, but in terms of the co-ownership of the book, we produced it at a cost price, so there was no profit for me or anybody else. Made it as cheap as possible for each of the poets to buy as many as they wanted and then go out and sell them.
So let's just go back a little bit. So you came from Bendigo, was that what you said?
That's right.
And there was a poetry scene in Bendigo in the earlier 90s or...
That's right. So there was a big warehouse arts collective space called Art Space in the centre of town, where sculptors and musicians and poets could put up a bit of plywood and build their own little studio and do their own work. So out of that, spontaneous sort of collective space, poets came through. And Sean was part of a poetry reading scene there that would do poetry pub crawls around Bendigo's 80 pubs, where you would go to a pub and do a read and then have a drink and then see how many pubs you could get to before you fell over.
So. Well, what a great idea. Why don't we do that more often? Yeah. And now, Eddie, you're in the studio as well.
Yes.
Can you tell me, what do you remember about the readings at the Empress of India at that time?
I never knew about the readings at the Empress, but there was lots of readings that I knew about. I might just read a little bit of my reflections on the era from the book. I used to be a visual artist, but in the 80s took up poetry and short story writing. In the 90s, I studied creative writing there. I found my voice as a fiction writer and as a performance poet, and frequented numerous spoken word readings. It was a huge scene, with readings on most nights of the week, sometimes two. Melbourne ranked as one of the world's spoken word hotspots. It still does. I started experiments with the language, playing with sound, form and dynamics as I do today. There was a great vibe, daring and eclectic, electric, as autobiographical poets bared their souls. Political poets vented their rage. Performance poets competed for popularity, and MCs were like rock stars. Poetry at the Rochester Castle and the Perseverance poets were big. The Dan O'Connell poetry took off, as did Budinsky's Theatre of Exile, McCoppin's at the Art House, and the Art House soon followed by the Barleycorn and Babel.
Great. So, Joel, let's get to some of the poems in this new book, Millennium Poets 2. So sure. What would you like to read?
Well, I'm going to read a poem called Jacarandas on Waiora Road. So it's about my experience of living in Macleod. And Waiora Road has this wonderful line of jacarandas. So if you get there at the right time of year, just after the weather's starting to turn at the end of summer, all of the jacaranda flowers blow out on the road and you get this whole roadway of purple. And I love little kind of incidental experiences like that that you get in the city or where you live, where you have to be in that moment to have that experience. And it's so ephemeral that these petals will only last for a day. So, you need to be there to see that beautiful experience and then it's gone. So that sort of fits into, my love of things like spoken word, where people are telling you their emotional news. So when you write it down or when you see a book like Millennium Poets, it's captured the emotional mood of the time. So the first book, the reason I got involved in it was to be part of making that happen and having that record of not just the facts of what was going on in the city at the time from a typical news point of view, but the emotional experience. So this poem sort of is reflective of that. Jacarandas on Waiora Road. First day of summer. There was a storm through overnight. All the trees have been shaken down. December snow in the sunlight. Blossoms fill my windscreen, shimmer in the daybreak. I flick my wipers on first thing, watch them glitter as they fly. We heard it come through last night on the warm breeze around midnight. Dry leaves whipped the side of the house. We knew the morning would be changed somehow. It was a storm coming through, turning the tide, carrying the season on the wind. We woke up to a brand new dawn, in a summer state of mind. First day of summer, things have changed, I feel it. First day of summer, the engine starts, embrace it. First day of summer, the heat is on your face. First day of summer, you know this place. And when I hear that storm wind rise again, I know December's near an end. And if I look out my window, I'll see jacaranda flowers falling. I'll know the new year's calling me. Petals line the pathway, purple and silver far ahead, promising a new day.
Beautiful. Yeah, there's something about the way the jacaranda heralds summer. It's such a significant indicator of summer. And it's a beautiful thing to drive around the streets and see all those incredible trees.
Yeah.
Yeah. What would you like to read next?
I would like to read a poem that's inspired by our current shadow federal treasurer, Tim Wilson. Tim Wilson went on Q&A a little while ago and said that there's no point writing poetry because there's no money in it. And so I thought, Tim, well, you know, there are people who write poetry that you probably would identify with. We know he has a giant painting of Ronald Reagan above his matrimonial bed. So there are people out there that Tim would identify with, like Clive Palmer and Gina Reinhart, who've been known to write poems. So I thought I'd write this poem about Tim's point of view and show him that there are people that he would resonate with who also write poems as well, to see if I could change his mind. So this poem is for Tim Wilson. Alan Jones likes poetry. Did you figure him for that? John Laws writes it. Clive Palmer recites it. Poetry is where it's at. Even Gina had a crack and stuck some on a rock. And Howard might have dug Dylan's, but while he said the music was good, he said the words were schlock. Nero made everyone listen to his, so they burned Rome to the ground. Mussolini knocked out verses, Mao did too, then filled up the hearses, no wonder no one frowned. But Tim Wilson doesn't like it. Why would you bother, he said. No point writing poetry if it won't make you a crumb of bread. Well, some people just don't get it. The poetry's totally right-wing. They might have paintings of Reagan over their beds, but see no point in the rhymey thing. If they did, they would have twigged that there's power in the words. That's why every rich bore wants to be Shakespeare. Just don't tell them that they're nerds.
Great. Great. Yeah. And I mean, these people, I don't know where they find them. Anyway. Okay, so Eddie, what would you like to read?
I'd like to read a piece called Death Awaits the Din. I will say about my poetry that, I tend not to do realism or really inspired by the everyday portrayal of things, though my work has lots of images and snippets from real life, but I like to turn things on their head, and I'm playing with language and form and images. And okay, here we are. Death Awaits the Din. The days are dead. Frail bodies flop. A car ran over a foot. There's an acorn in my ear. I tweaked something and it responded appropriately. The night is ruptured by rapturous applause. Sedate sentinels stumble along. The coffee mug fell over. I hate dogs. With my cane, I felt some sort of substance. A year is a lifetime. My diary is full. Death awaits the dim. Senses, sense, sense. I prattled off a series of things in a very prattling manner. The dawn is dreary, but I remain on top. I like being a spaceship. The earth is a tip. Sedate sentinels slapped out a syncopated beat. 1 second in the history of the universe. The carrion ran off with my foot. Better wafer pin, irate frogs.
Yay. So, now, Eddie, you're a bit of a surrealist, aren't you?
Yes, a bit of a surrealist, absurdist, and postmodernist.
And we just had a few weeks ago, a week ago, the Surrealist Festival at, where was that held?
That was at the Temperance Hall in South Melbourne. Yeah, it was a wonderful event. I presented a surreal play of mine, a short play, and did some random costume performance with Lulu, my partner, and performed with her crazy new puppet costume character.
Incredible. And how did you get interested in surrealism and absurdism and all those unusual forms?
Well, mostly I just found that, firstly, postmodernism, I realised, that's what I'm doing. It was kind of like that. I was, I did a short story at RMIT professional writing course years ago, and Anya Wallwitz was the teacher, and she would be presenting very different sorts of writing. And a lot of them were experimental forms. It was those experimental forms which really got me interested in trying unusual things. I also found that my work just happened to fit in with absurdism and surrealism. Yeah, I just like doing weird things and inspired by imaginative works.
Great, yeah. Anya Wallwitz, I never met her, but she has a great legacy in Melbourne poetry.
Famous.
I think she was born in Poland and emigrated here, but taught at RMIT for many years. And it was a great exponent of experimental and absurdist work.
A great reader of her work too.
Yeah, yeah. Very much a performance reader. Okay, so this is the Spoken Word program, and I'm talking to Joel O'Connor and Eddie Berger about the brand new book, Millennium Poets 2, which is launched at the end of March at the Empress of India Hotel. And how do people get a hold of a copy if they want to get a copy, Joel?
Yes, there's two ways that people can get hold of the book. There's a website, Tales from the Treehouse, a fellow publisher who puts books up online for people to sell. So talesfromthetreehouse.com.au. If you go to the shop there, you'll be able to buy the book directly. Or you can go to my website, joeloconnor.net, email me at joel@joeloconnor.net, and you can purchase a copy that way as well.
We will also be making efforts to get it into bookstores around the place, and I'll be taking copies to poetry readings for a while too.
Oh, good. And so which poetry readings would you be going to, Eddie?
The Yorkshire Stingo Hotel on corner of Language Street and Hoddle Street in Abbotsford. There's also Bar Usu on Sydney Road in Brunswick on Tuesday nights. There's the Motley Bauhaus on Johnson Street or Elgin in Carlton on Wednesday night, and Creatures of Habit on Brunswick Street in Fitzroy on Wednesday, every second Wednesday night.
Amazing. Okay, so thinking about this new book, Millennium Poets 2, there's a number of different poets in it. I think some of them have passed away, like Grant McCracken. Who else is no longer with us?
So there were a few poets who were connected to the scene who read regularly at the Empress, who we've included in this book as a valet. We've reached out to their friends and family, told them about the book, and asked if they had poems that they could contribute. So there's a poet, Anthony James Day, who later became known as the Hobart Dancing Man, whose brother has recorded his poems and gave us permission to put those poems in the book. Darren Dickman was another poet from Brisbane who spent a lot of time in Melbourne and isn't with us anymore. And the fabulous Grant Alexander McCracken, who was connected to the Empress Hotel and did some MCing and so on. And it's part of the Venn diagram of poetry scenes that sort of connected people like Eddie and I at the time. Overlapping, and ended up seeing that we lived together in a share house in Kew in the late 90s with 10 bedrooms and a very kind of theatrical arts collective vibe as well.
Wow, that's incredible. So a 10-bedroom house in Kew, Eddie. How many people lived in this house?
about 12 with a couple of people couch surfing a lot of the time.
And what sort of things did they do in normal life?
Well, there were, I guess, hippies and arty people, fire twirlers, and I can't remember what Tom did. Anyway, yeah, it's all sorts of... I was just an artist. I was working somewhere. I think I was, taking time off to... I just finished working at RMIT Library, and I was going to be studying the next year.
Yeah, amazing. So that was in the 90s, this big share house.
That's right, in the late 90s.
In what was the address?
It was 105 Princess Street, Kew, right at the top of the hill there.
Oh, great. Yeah. And did it have a special name?
Yeah, it was nicknamed the Other Mansion because there was another big share house called the Mansion in the area.
Amazing. Yeah. Great. Okay, so we just mentioned there were a few poets who are in this anthology who are no longer with us. Would you like to read some of their poems, Joel?
Yes, I'd love to read a poem by Anthony James Day called If I Had Wings.
Okay.
So I was able to reach out to his brother and he gave us permission to include some of Anthony's poems in the book. If I Had Wings. Don't know where I was born. Don't know where I'll die. But when I do, I'll become a golden eagle, a prince in the sky. If I had wings, I would fly away. If I had wings, I would leave this place today. If I had wings, I would fly right out of here. If I had wings, I'd be free, have no fear. If I had wings of an eagle, I would fly to the sun. If I had wings of a barn owl, I would fly to the moon. If I had wings of the albatross, I would fly across the seven seas. If I had wings of a turtle dove, I would fly to your room. If I had wings, I could fly to anywhere. I would return to you still. If I had wings, I'd perch on your windowsill. If I had wings, I'd set my wings to flight. If I had wings, I'd fly back to you tonight. I hear the universe call.
Wow. Mm. Well, Vale Anthony Day. Yeah. Much missed.
Mm. Yes, Anthony had a second creative career. It turns out in Hobart, he became known as the Hobart Dancing Man after he left Melbourne, and he used to dance in the street in front of the Sony or Brash's music store down there that would play music in the main street and inspire everybody with his creative and free dancing.
Wow. Yeah. Well, that's a special gift.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's read another poem from one of the poets who's no longer with us.
I found a really beautiful poem in here by Grant Alexander McCracken called Wedding Veil for Lele. I don't know if you want to read that one, Eddie. You had a very close connection with Grant, or if you'd like me to read it.
You're probably better because you're more familiar with it.
Okay, all right. There's a lot of love in this poem. I really like it. Grant McCracken, Wedding Veil of Lele. I take a rainbow and fold it around your head to make a crown, the crown of love. I take something invisible, not body or solid, more spiritual, like a cloud in the form of your heart, and I feel its warmth, a grey subtle feeling, not loud. Married sister devotion, blessing speeches from the preacher, with an emphasis on this human union and not God's intrusion. And I take a stance, a slant, proud. I take your hand and put it in my clown smile. Makeup is always necessary when you've been crying. I take a memory of when we played, piano keys and guitar strings, trying in vain to strike a harmony. I take a wish you made when you were very young and fell to the ground, that if you were a boy then it wouldn't hurt anymore because you are tough. And I've turned it around, seen myself as a girl. Believe me, we're better off as we are, though I've got great legs in fishnets. You wouldn't suit sideburns. I take a glass and skull, this abyss, salute the marriage of two people in the eyes of the church, the world and the whole universe. My sister, I love. You're in my thoughts, my hearts and veins. Little sister, take care of yourself and stay happy, and I'll take the same.
Oh, lovely poem. So... Yeah. Yeah, Grant. I only knew him at like the Dan O'Connell, and not in earlier venues. But at that time, he'd had a car accident and had some traumatic brain injury. Mm. So was this written before then?
Yeah. So when he was reading at the Empress in his full flight, you know, in the early to mid 90s, when he was up and about in his big Stetson hat and his full leathers, you know, he was a very theatrical poet. So this sort of poem probably doesn't do justice for the way that he delivered it with, you know, all of his volume and theatrics and physicality as well. But yes, he was very dynamic and people remember and love him for that.
Mm. Yeah, he was a great character. Now, there's a poem in here that I particularly liked by Daniel Dupree about his cat.
His cat Maxie, who just happens to be a valet, kind of poignantly, because Maxie passed away only a couple of weeks ago. And Maxie was Daniel's best friend for about 20 years. Daniel Dupree for Maxie, my cat. I hope they find our skeletons together, the archaeologists of the distant future. I hope they find my jawbone next to yours and puzzle over the missing pieces and how unconditional love could be encoded in a jawbone. I hope they find us this way then.
Beautiful. Mm. Yeah, and there's a little note underneath which says Max passed away suddenly on 4th of January 2026, aged 17 years. A few years after I'd written this, I had no idea when I got him at 10 months old just how incredibly strong and intense the bond between us would become. So, well, what a rich mine of wonderful material there is in the new book, Millennium Poets 2.
Yeah, it's been wonderful to see it come together and to see it inspire a new generation of poets as well, and for them to, you know, get a vision of what their art can be. So some of the younger poets that have been involved in this have really got a fillip out of it and have, you know, got inspired then to go on and start exploring their art, go back to TAFE and do graphic design and this sort of thing. So I love an art project when I see it develop a life of its own inside each person and give them, you know, inspiration to go on and do other things. And this project has got that.
Yeah, and it also has a wonderful record of material from many of the different Melbourne performance poets who aren't readily collected or easily available. So it has a special kind of place there as well.
Mm. Yeah, so some of the poets in like Jez P.A. Spielman, who reads regularly and, you know, is connected to poetry scenes that that Eddie's involved in, told me this is the first time he's ever been sort of formally published in a book. So, you know, feeling really inspired and proud to actually be printed and having the chance to do that is something that this book is giving poets like Jez as well.
Yeah, great. Yes, it's a really good contribution and I hope it gets into some libraries. So I've been speaking to Joel O'Connor and Eddie Berger. Thank you both for coming in.
Thanks so much,
Thanks, Di.
And can you just remind me of the name of the website the book is available from?
That's right, talesfromthetreehouse.com.au/shop.
Great. Okay. And my name is Di Cousins and this has been Spoken Word Program. 3CR.